Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is John Davis, and he tells me that he is on a mission, and that is to unite as many meditation practitioners as possible in a focused meditation to heal the earth. And he backs that up by referring to what is known as the Maharishi effect. When people are of a like mind and meditate in a major city, the crime rate drops, prosperity rises, and an overall state of well-being prevails. And each of these conditions is a product of the human consciousness, and each can be altered with focused intent during meditation. That's a terrific ambition, John. Welcome to the program.
Why, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
How long is it that you've had such an ambition? I mean, have you always felt the need to do something very, of great service to the people and the planet?
Well, I've always felt that as a whole, it would take the mass consciousness to make a change on the planet. And so I felt that it was something that was really important to get as many people united in the same goal as possible. And so I started this quite some time ago, more than a year ago. I started doing it, and then I started adding people to my website and handing down the free meditation as well.
Right. So how did you approach such a challenge? I mean, it must be hard in the first instance to reach these many practitioners that you want to sort of join you in this mission.
Oh, it certainly was a challenge at first. What I did was I immediately started contacting all the meetup groups I could find and all the meditation groups on the websites and Facebook and Twitter and all the ones I could find. And I just started contacting them and all, as many radio show hosts as possible as well, and TV and radio, and just try to spread the word as far and as wide as I possibly could.
Okay, so how do you get to the point where you can coordinate all of the efforts and really release the power of group meditation? Or doesn't it matter? I mean, as long as people are all focusing on the same result, does it achieve it?
Well, I firmly believe it does, as the Maharishi effect says, that when they do it on a smaller scale, it affects the whole region. And I think by getting people to meditate globally, I think we end up putting our intention in the direction, and eventually that intention would make a difference. It's, in my mind, intention is the same as prayer in some form or affirmations. But as long as we're having our mindset in the fact that we are here to help and here to help heal the earth, then our drive and our intention will then affect the global vibration, as it were.
Right. So is it required of people that they all meditate in a similar way or focus on the same things?
Not at all. It all matters that we all have the same intention of being in a helpful way. Now, to help people out who don't do a lot of meditation, I put a free download for a guided meditation on my website,
yes.
So they can go down there, they can download it, and they can follow it along. But if they want to do their own style of meditation and meditate with well being in mind or with the intention of healing the earth, then I think that, or even if they just meditate at that, going into their meditation expecting to expand the vibration of calmness and serenity, that's wonderful.
Right. So your real objective is really to introduce as many people as possible to the idea of meditation, and I guess the more they do it to bring a balance on the earth, to bring love to it, the better the result.
Absolutely. And being a meditator myself, when I find that when I meditate, I come to a very peaceful, relaxed state, and that lasts for long periods of time, and then when I meditate again, it just reintroduces it, and over time, my state of well-being and joy, and the good things that come into my life started to expand because of my resonance, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yes.
And so by getting this other people to resonate or vibrate or just live in the same sort of flow of that healthy energy, then I think that we can affect lots of things in lots of ways. I've been very fortunate in my life to witness, people heal themselves through various means, and it's always about the intention and about the belief that they are creating something better. And yes, if we get a whole mass consciousness doing that for the Earth, wow! What can we achieve?
Right. Now, since you've evidently had this interest in meditation for many years, are you familiar with Mingyal Rinpoche?
No, I'm not, actually.
Beg your pardon?
You said Rinpoche?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you might be, because obviously wherever you see something relative to the powers of meditation, you probably make a dive in for it. Funnily enough, as the strange coincidence happened in the last week before your program, or before my program, mm-hmm. an interview with you, I saw 1.5-page article on the Huffington Post about Mingyal Rinpoche, and he was talking about awareness meditation. He's incidentally a revered Tibetan Buddhist Lama, and he's been called, so-called, the happiest man in the world, and because of his own, I suppose, ability to achieve this inner peace, which most Buddhists seem to have. Anyway, he was talking about test subjects for some of the most cutting-edge neurological theories, and he said he's a firm supporter of the ongoing dialogue between science and Buddhism. And he said he came to believe, and this is what I want to find out if you agree, that contemporary scientific theory and his meditation practices were aligned. And he says, science and meditation teachings are exactly parallel, but they don't speak the same language. What do you feel about that?
Oh, I completely agree with that. If you want to look at it from a very interesting perspective, you look at Albert Einstein proved that there is nothing solid in an atom, and then the quantum physicists are now proving that when we think, they can measure our waveforms within those atoms. And noetic science is now proving that when we think with intention, we can actually create cells. And so if you look at that aspect, that is the process of putting an intention or a thought out or a vibration out through this energy that is the atoms, this formless energy. Now, when you jump over to Buddhism, the Buddhism says what you think you become, you create your world. And Krishna says you are the culmination of your thought. And if you want to jump into Christianity, Jesus, says whatever you wish, ask in God's name, and it is granted. But according to Moses, God's name is I Am, and that's a thought, that's an intention.
Yes.
And so your thought and intention goes out, and that gets created around you. And we are truly created in the image of whatever this is. I call it God because my mom was Catholic, but you can call it anything you want.
Right. Well, I have to say, when you look around us and what is happening and our history, we haven't been terribly good at creating peace, have we?
Isn't that the truth? And a lot of that stems back to, if you want to look at it from a historical perspective, it goes back to the Nicene Council. And there was a rift created between all religions at the Nicene Council when they declared Jeshua ben Joseph, or Jesus, they declared him as God on earth as opposed to a wonderful teacher.
Yes.
And once he became that, then what happened was all the other religions were wrong in their perspective, and we had a big, huge schism in the world. That's a lot of the wars that we create today are still created in the names of the various avatars of old.
Yes. Indeed. Well, Rinpoche went on to say that he underwent brain imaging scans to test the effects of meditation, and they found that the brain changed significantly during meditation. I wouldn't say that was a surprise at all, but Rinpoche said the result was that his gamma synchronicity was very high, and they told him they'd never seen such a level of synchronicity before. And they said that it represents different populations of neurons working together in a network in order to carry out cognitive functions. I know this is perhaps a bit high talking for some people on a bit more simple explanation, but he said the gamma activity increased by meditation remained high even after the meditation has ceased. And this is the point I wanted to say, is that the studies indicated that meditation was an example of neuroplasticity, that is, the ability of the brain to change. And simply put, the laboratory concluded that meditation physically alters the brain. I've made my point.
But I completely believe that. I know that when I meditate, and I meditate for a period of time, that feeling of that meditation lasts for a very long time. And I feel that serenity and that relaxed state and that state of wellness for a long period of time. So I know that the effects of it last for a long period of time. I know that if I continue to go through meditation processes, that the effects are cumulative and things start to get better all the way around throughout my life.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it is, it's like Buddha said, you know, the secret to enlightenment is the eradication of fear. When you go into a meditative state, the fearful states that we bump into in our everyday world are released. And so we're not carrying along a bunch of fearful states that are in our consciousness, or our subconsciousness, preferably said. Mm. But as we release those in meditation, so too does less and less come into our experience. And then also, it's being said that there's a scientific theory right now that says that if you have a continual practice for 21 days, that you create a new habit. Well, what that does is that creates a new subconscious belief. So if your subconscious belief is in the mindset of that joyful, blissful place in meditation, you've actually created a new subconscious belief underneath, which continues to create on its own.
Mm.
So okay. The cumulative effect is really great. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, a final comment about this little article I read about Rinpoche is that he was mentioning that many studies have shown that meditation is good for the mind, it's also good for the body, and it's good for the immune system, blood circulation, and really coming to the point you've just made, and overall sense of happiness. So when you look at it, there's a very good reason, isn't it, for everybody to take up meditation.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's life-altering for most people. I have a very, very dear friend of mine who I've worked with for many, many years who used to suffer from anxiety attacks. And he started meditating, and all of his anxiety attacks stopped. So meditation is very much a wonderful tool. Now, some people, you know, use the same tool, you know, when they sleep. You know, as the Dalai Lama said, the best meditation is sleep. But, you know, for me, I like to do both because it makes me feel even better.
Yeah. Right. Now, also by coincidence, I've happened to come across another article a few weeks back in a magazine that I get monthly. And again, I'm wondering whether this is someone whose work you might have come across, Roger Taylor.
Oh, I've heard that name. I don't know where I've heard that name, but I've definitely heard it.
Right, okay. Well, what he did, he wrote quite a long article. He must have had you in mind here. he called it Healing the World by Collective Meditation.
So, wow.
That's right down your street, isn't it?
Now, oh, it sure is.
He went into the whole subject of meditation and experiments connected with it, and he said they found that distance was no obstacle to instant communication between two particles. And he said there were two very convincing lines of evidence that the first concerns brain waves, that the technology was available for the study of EEGs, and it enabled one to quantify the degree to which two wave trains are in sync. And he went on to say that they were working on this, and at least three groups of scientists have shown and he reckoned this was as expected, that there is usually a degree of synchrony between the two halves of a single person's brain. But he said what was new and exciting is the finding of synchrony between separate individuals, and he said this occurs principally where there is close relationships, as with lovers or mother and child. But he said, however, some beautiful results from a researcher in Italy have shown high degrees of synchrony between people meditating together. And that's what actually caught my eye then. You want to comment on that?
One of the studies that I read one time, was they took two meditators and they put them in the same building, and they put them in separate rooms, and their heart rates synced up as they meditated. Another study had two of them in two separate rooms, and then they agitated one of them while they were meditating, and the other one had the same heart rate change that the one that was being agitated did. So I'm a firm believer that we're all part of one collective consciousness anyway, in some form. As Edgar Cayce would have said, the universal consciousness, we all have the ability to tap into that. By going off into meditation, what we're actually doing is we're setting down our conscious self to tap into a much larger, higher self. And we are, going into the state of that higher self. That's, if you want to put it in a very esoteric or a very, religious sort of way, they say God is love. Well, what we do in meditation is we go into that loving state. And so we actually are being enfolded in the greater image of God or universe or consciousness, whatever you want to call it, but by dropping into that state, we're actually touching the connection between all of us, which is why I believe the healing the earth meditation works so well, is because I believe that by connecting here, and the way my guided meditation works is I have them first find that state of that loving feeling by remembering a moment in their life that had that loving feeling. And then I have them visualize sharing that out to their family and friends. And then I visualize it going down through their family and friends into the earth and coming back to them as well. And then I have them visualize their family and friends passing it on to their families and their friends. And so it spreads out wider and wider and wider. You find out really quickly that by doing that, you actually jump the pond, as they say, pretty quickly. Because, we all have ancestors and relatives and all over the world. And so we very quickly can surround the world with this feeling, this vibration. And so, and that's just, one person meditating. But if you get thousands doing the same thing, you're doing amazing work. Amazing work.
Absolutely. And again, it's funny you should start talking on this particular aspect of meditation, but... he was also mentioning that researchers find meditation, especially with the heart focus, to result in the heart rate going up and down smoothly. He said it's so-called heart rhythm coherence. And he said that contrasts with the random chaotic trace seen during stress. And he said significantly in the present context, they find the state of heart rhythm coherence to enable people to do things by mental intent alone, like changing the physical properties of water or of human DNA. And he was saying in this, they're only confirming what has been so well documented in parapsychology, that the influence of the human minds extends not only to other human minds, but to the outer reality too. So that's an interesting observation
absolutely. And what's interesting, I've done a lot of healing facilitating with people where I help people heal themselves, and the interesting thing is in the healing process, it's not about the person there being a healer. It's about that person changing their belief, their intention, their vibration, changing their vibration and their belief into I am healthy as opposed to I am an ailment. Then they change the physical body as well. And I say that with complete confidence because I was born with a reverse eardrum and an 80% deficiency in one of my ears, and I hear perfectly out of the ear now. And I was also born with spina bifida occulta, and my back would go out 2-3 times a month. And now through my process of changing my belief and altering my vibration, I actually have not had a back issue in more than 15 years.
Wow.
And it's all a matter of just changing your belief. As Buddha said, what you think, you become. And so if you think something more whole and more complete, you end up creating that into your experience.
Yes. And I was going to say, does all this sort of tie in with the law of attraction? In other words, what you think you attract to yourself.
Absolutely. With the interesting thing about the law of attraction, it's a wonderful piece that's been brought out to the world. But the one thing that they're not saying outright, which I really wish they would, is that you are literally the creator of your experience. And you have this energetic source that says you can have anything. Here it is. But you have to be the one to ask. If you look at it biblically, it says, ask and you shall receive. You got to remember, you are the one asking.
Yes.
And so people tend to put it outside of their own experience. For meditation, we get into a meditative state and we create this blissful state. Well, the more we create in that blissful place, the more blissful things surround us in our physical life as well.
Yes. When you look at it that way, it seems to make perfectly good sense. Another point that came up in this article was he mentioned that for near on 100 years now, quantum physics has been dissolving our solid world into one of ghostly, insubstantial fields. And he went on to say that the familiar fields, such as magnetism, are local in the sense of being firmly rooted to a particular locality in space. And their influence needs to travel through, space at the speed of light. And he says there is clear evidence for subtle interconnectedness which behaves as if space does not exist. And he said it's now been proved incontrovertibly that two particles can remain in instant communication, whatever the distance between them. So for two particles, you speak of two people. And it means that, as it said, that distance is no object.
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it once again on the atomic level, here we are. I just said that Einstein proved there's nothing solid within an atom; it's all formless energy. Well, when someone takes a breath, the air they breathe is made out of atoms as well as the lungs that breathe it. So that air is part of the same atomic structure as the whole mass of all this. So we are actually one giant mass of energy, and we're creating it as we go. And if you want to look at it from an interesting perspective, as I said earlier, quantum physicists have proven that you can measure the waveforms, and then noetic science is proving that you can create cells. If you go back to drop it into the Bible, the first lines of the book of John go, "In the beginning is the Word was with God, the Word was God." Well, in the beginning of what you create is your belief and your words, because your words come from your belief. It goes out to this source, which is God, and then this source creates it in his image around you, or his / her image around you. So that statement right there says what you are believing and saying is happening to you, right there at the beginning of the book of John, which I think is really interesting, because, our belief is part of our creation, and meditation creates a belief in a positive state. So if you look at another chapter, another little verse in the Bible, which is very rarely quoted, but there's a verse that says the disciples asked him what diet they should follow. And his response was, "I would be more worried about what comes out of your mouth than what goes in."
Mm.
Because your words are a direct correlation to your belief.
Yes, and they do say energy travels out and seems to go on forever, so it doesn't dissipate as soon as it leaves your body.
Exactly. Yeah, and sometimes the wisest people in the world are children. And my 7-year-old the other day put his hand out beside his body and he says, "Daddy, I'm touching Grandpa." I said, "What do you mean you're touching Grandpa?" He says, "Well, when Grandpa died, he became energy again, and everything here is energy, and I'm touching him right now." So he had a very simplistic belief that everything here and Grandpa was part of everything, which I thought was just lovely.
Right. Yeah, I think you'll have to move over and make way for a new man there.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
I think he's going to end up being a much better speaker than I.
Right, he's got the right approach. Now, what Roger Taylor went on to say in his article is that people have experimented or taken readings where there's been gatherings of lots of people, such as theatres or religious meetings, and they went to record the times when there was simultaneous focus of emotion, such as when the audience laughed together or held their breath at some dramatic scene. And they found a lot of significant correlations, meaning that even when we're in a theatre audience, we tend to affect each of the people around us, and then it becomes sort of spontaneous, doesn't it? We all laugh together, we all cry or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, I was, for many years, a comedy performer all over the world. And the interesting thing was, you always hope for one person into your audience to be a laugher.
Yes.
Because if that one person starts to laugh, the whole audience will laugh.
Right.
The whole audience will follow that energy. And there's a lovely YouTube video called Bodhisattva on Metro, which I saw recently. And actually, every so often I repost it because it's such a lovely image. This man walks into a subway train, sits down, and just slowly starts to laugh. And eventually the whole subway train is laughing. He gets up and he goes over to the next subway train. Starts the next one laughing.
I thought you were going to say he went over to him and said, "What are you laughing at?"
Well, that would have been funny, wouldn't it? he got him laughing and he walked over and started the next group laughing. And I look at that from the aspect of, you know, Bodhisattva means the divine within, basically. And I love the idea of carrying this joyful, loving energy and taking it somewhere and planting it and letting it spread out. And then, you know, once you've done your job there, go and plant it somewhere else. You know, I think it's pretty lovely.
Yes. I think we can all vouch for this laughter syndrome, because I know for a fact myself, if I'm sitting, say, in a coffee bar or something like that, and there's a little group of people just out of hearing distance and they start laughing, you find yourself wanting to laugh as well. It just seems to work that way.
It totally works. And how many times have you seen, you know, someone close to you who's in a sad state that you felt sad immediately when you saw them in that state? I mean, the vibration affects. The vibration definitely affects. And it's not just on the data that's coming into you, but it's the feeling, it's the vibration. People say all the time that they can walk into a room and they can feel whether the room is tense or not.
Indeed. I seem to recall that there was some comment about the effect on humanity's consciousness on the day of 9/11. Apparently, that had a similar effect. There was masses of people that suddenly were at the same level of consciousness. I mean, sort of shocked and in awe or whatever.
Oh, sure. I mean, and that event, you know, it affected the United States pretty heavily. But if you go around the world and talk to the people in Europe, they were very much affected by that as well.
Yes.
Because no one ever thought the U.S. would be hit for, you know. And to see it happen was very much a world-shaking event.
Yeah, I would say a shock indeed, yes. Now, I don't know whether it was in the UK or in the States, but I can remember some years ago reading about the effect of meditation, which I have a feeling you might have mentioned somewhere on your website, when they did meditation. Let me look at my notes here, make sure I get this correct. Yes, it was the Maharishi International University's Institute of Science that found that transcendental meditation used in a condition where there were social indications of people with violent crime. Over 40 studies, transcendental meditation has the greatest or the biggest effect to reduce the level of crime that actually took place.
I think the reason that is because it is the most studied form of meditation that there is as well. I'm less about the form and more about the intention thereof, because a lot of people have very specific structures on how they meditate, over the years, what's happened to my structure is I now just close my eyes and slip into that state. So yes. I don't have the structure anymore. You know, I don't typically use mantras and stuff anymore because I just slip into that state. But TM, because of its, it did a couple of really great things. One of the great things is it did is that it brought meditation to a larger awareness, which I think is wonderful. It also was affected by, you know, it was also propelled forward by such, you know, by the Beatles and all, like a lot of rock stars and all were doing TM for a long time. And I think it's a lovely, lovely means of learning meditation, a lovely means of moving forward in the meditation. However, I think any form that says this is the end all be all needs to be looked at as well. Because I think we each come to our place in the universe, our place in the divine, and the base of this vibration from our own path. And I think it's right for you or it's not. As Buddha said, believe no one, even me, unless it rings true to your heart. And so if suddenly that form of meditation no longer works for you, then follow your path.
Yes, indeed. And go. What I found interesting about this TM meditation, though, was they only meditated twice a day, and they said that violent crime figure dropped progressively by 23%. I mean, that's an incredibly high percentage. And when they looked at the statistics, they found no correlation with that sort of drop in crime. So when you add it all up, you have to say that meditation did have some great effect there, whether people can explain it or not. Now,
And what was really interesting about those studies is that during the meditation that did happen, but when in the big meditation, they went into New York City and they meditated and it dropped the crime rate, everything dropped. And then to prove their theory, they got up and left, and right after they left, it spiked back up. The actual rate spiked back up.
Yes.
So it was very interesting how keeping that state was very important to that process.
Indeed, yes. Now, I'll keep quoting from this article because it is interesting and relevant to what we're talking about. They also found evidence that that when meditators were in the same room, they were responding to electromagnetic fields of each other's brains. But apparently there was a German group that rejected this hypothesis by finding that synchrony still occurred between two individuals in distant rooms, and screened inside Faraday cages. And so they said, if so, then the individual's brain waves must have become correlated by way of the zero-point field, as indeed they find likely in other examples. So these investigations go quite deep, don't they, into the, if you like, the mechanics of meditation.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and like I said, you know, if you looked at meditation like in the form of prayer, I mean, somebody goes into the state of praying for that person. They had a study with a Catholic healer in Cleveland, Ohio, who prayed for a lady in Columbus, Ohio, and NASA was able to measure the electric pulse. NASA was actually able to measure the spike when he put his prayer up. So that's 3 hours drive apart. So the distance wasn't an issue at all. So very, very interesting. And you know, she had her belief too. Now that's another aspect of it for me is you know, if when you do a prayer sort of meditation like that, you know, somebody can put it out, great, but the other person has to receive it and believe it for it to happen.
Yes.
So it is a reciprocal thing.
Yeah. Now, I thought there was a nice summary about this meditation article when he said that, and I quote, Since we know with such certainty now that we are all connected at a subtle level, we must allow for the possibility that we are having an influence all the time, not only during the set times of spiritual practice. It may be that we are never off duty, but are on the stage all the time. This influence would come not from any kind of activity, not by any doing, but by the quality of our being. And I thought that was a very strong point made there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Here's something interesting as well. If you look at it from the perspective of, you know, 90% of the time, not actually more than 90% of the time, the human species is in the subconscious mind as opposed to the conscious mind. And what meditation does is it puts you firmly in the conscious mind. It puts you, because it actually puts you into this present moment, because subconscious mind is always in a different time frame. It's either in the past or the future. It's always working from or working towards. And so you come into this place of what your belief is in subconscious mind, and then if you take that same element and then you start to focus it down to the present moment, then you are creating something different. Now, if you really want to look at this from a perspective of being, you know, in the effect all the time, you know, our belief is a vibration, is an intention, and our belief being expressed in words. Like a lot of times, some of your listeners tonight, today, said, I am going to listen to that radio show tonight. And they believed they could, and so vibrationally they did all the things in alignment with that belief, and now they're listening to the radio show. But if you shift your intention to, I am healing the earth, I am doing my part to heal the earth, then you are consciously creating that form. And
yes.
So the tough part is in the world is that all of this creation stuff that people have wanted to do, it is happening all the time, always. But it's when we shift into the conscious creation of something different that we really can affect the world.
Right. Now, I think we've had a good chat there about meditation, and we must save a little of our time to talk about your book. I believe your new one, Signs Along the Path, A Guide to an Inspired Life by John Davis and Holly Mattson, has been available for a time. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the object of it?
Absolutely. Well, that book is actually, it's a collection of my writings from my pretty popular blog, and it's designed to take you from a state of fear to a state of love. So it's my writings talking about fear and how to eradicate it and bringing me to the state of love in the end. The book has had great reviews and having a lot of effects on people's lives because it gives them an opportunity to tap into their own lives and release some of their fearful things and create something new and basically empower them along the way. And
right.
it's written in such a way that it's small writing, so you go in there and you might want to read one or two a day, or you might want to sit down and read the whole thing, but you can pick that up and just hit little things or just go all the way.
Right. I see it's available on Amazon, but can people get it through your website?
Right now, yeah, if they go to my website, I think it's going to kick them over to Amazon anyway. but yeah, they can definitely link to it from my website, and my website's got all kinds of other items as well. There's another book that's been written about me that's also available on Amazon called John of Old, John of New. It was written by Sharon Prince, a gifted intuitive, who had an incredible experience with me, and she ended up writing this book to tell that story. And there's another book coming out within the next year called The Simple Path, which is a book about tapping into your own power of creation and changing your life for the better, or just creating. If your life is wonderful now, make creating it even better, you know?
Right. You might, as we've mentioned it, give your website address.
It's www.johnofpeniel.com. It's johnofpeniel.com.
Right. Now, you are I'm sure, waiting for me to ask you, where did you get the name John of Peniel?
Well, this is where everyone gets a little divisive on what I'm about to say. But my experience was a very interesting experience in that I had raised Catholic, as I said, but I had 19 different psychics tell me about my past life as John, the beloved apostle.
Yes.
And I didn't believe it, and I had a big struggle with it for years and years and years. Mm. In fact, the first psychic who told me I wouldn't actually call her back. I wish she kept trying to call me saying, this is important, we need to do something with this. And I was like, I don't want to touch that. And then one of my biggest experiences was that I was doing my self-healing meditation CD, which is on my website. And as I was doing that, the artwork for that cover, I was basically told to change my name. Because I used to go as Jonathan New. And I said, what? And she said, wanted me to change to John of Peniel. And I was like, okay, this is me just tapping into source. So I changed it. I mean, I called all my friends and said, is this anything good? You know? And then I found out that Edgar Cayce in the late 30s predicted that John the Beloved would reincarnate and his name would again be John, and that he would use the name Peniel.
Yes.
And so I was like, I don't know if I'm that guy or not. And I don't really, you know, I don't necessarily think it matters. For me, what matters is what I'm doing right now in the present moment. It doesn't matter who I was 2,000 years ago or even 5 minutes ago. It only matters that I am in positive intention and doing good works in the world right now.
Right. Now, the point I would make there is you mentioned, of course, that this is this name, John of Peniel, was in Edgar Cayce's writings. But I distinctly recall that he said that John the Peniel would be the one to discover one of the set of records of the history of the earth under the Sphinx. Now, have you been there looking for it?
I was taken there by a pretty famous author and a couple of other psychics, and I had a very, very big and profound experience there where I actually passed out on the Giza Plateau right behind the Sphinx.
Wow.
And I woke up. I was surrounded by 40 police officers, and it was a very interesting thing. But I, over the course of time, I had when I passed out, I had a very big experience, and I'm still kind of deciphering what that was because it was very big and very profound for me because I actually went out and had what I would call an in-time conversation with the guy that I call Jeshua.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still kind of really trying to understand what all that means. But, yeah, I've been there. And I know at some point I'm going to go back there. And the people I went with were very, very affected by what happened as well. And I know that when I passed out on the plateau, a gifted intuitive in California actually wrote an email saying, what did you just do? I felt something. And then another one in Texas wrote and said, I just got hit by this wave of energy. And so I don't know, you know, but like I said, I don't know what that was, but I do know that they did respond to it, which makes me think that something must have happened there that I might not be 100% privy to, but it was an amazing experience, and I will gladly go back to Egypt anytime.
Yes, well, can I put it this way? I wouldn't mind betting that in your period of loss of consciousness, if that's the way to describe it, that you probably met the guardian of the Sphinx, and possibly you may, in the near future, be the one who will be taken back to reveal the place of these Atlantean records. It would seem possible in view of what you said.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. And if anybody's curious to read any more about that Egypt trip, because it was a pretty big story. A part of that story is in the book John of Old, John of New,
right,
where it talks about the people I went with were very much into sacred geometry, and it was very funny because I went over there with the mindset of I'm just going with intention, because that's kind of the way I live my life. And they were very much into the sacred geometry and this line lining up with that line, and they were doing all kinds of moving energy vortexes and stuff like that. But for me, I went there with positive intention to do the work that I was supposed to do and meant to do. And I had this incredible experience. And like I said, I would go back right now if I could.
Right. Are you a believer in UFOs?
Well, you know, it's very interesting to ask that question. I have had a couple experiences that were very different that I can't explain. And if you'd like, I can share some of that with you. But
yes.
Well, there was one evening I was sitting in my parents' house, and I looked outside of the window, and I could see this cloud moving towards me. And I was like, oh, it's a cloud, because it was a bright full moon night. And as the cloud got closer, I could see that the cloud had straight line edges. And as it got closer to the house, I could see that it was triangular shaped. And I watched as this triangular object went straight over my house and headed straight towards Dover Air Force Base, which I thought was rather interesting. Because I lived in Rehoboth Beach and was heading towards Dover, which is the largest Air Force Base on the East Coast.
Right.
So that was the one experience. Another experience, I was in Ocean City, Maryland, and I was sitting on a balcony looking out over the water with a very dear friend of mine whose father had just recently passed. We were sitting at the talk. There was this glowing light out over the ocean. My first thought was a helicopter just sitting there floating in the air, and all of a sudden it shot straight up and out, and it went faster than any object I've ever seen in my life. And the last one, which was an interesting one, was I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we were watching fireworks from a hillside in two cities, and I could see the jets flying towards Pittsburgh Airport, and they're crawling across the sky slowly. Well, at a 90-degree angle to the direction that they were flying comes this other object, and it was, I first thought it had to be a satellite or something, but then as I watch it was moving easily 10 to 12 times faster than the planes were. And as I looked closer, I could see two objects spinning around each other as it went across the sky, which was pretty fascinating. And then the last story is that my aunt, when she was in the Peace Corps in the late 60s, actually videotaped, she Super 8 taped some UFOs over the Andes Mountains in Peru. And so I believe that there is stuff out there. Do I know what it is? The word unidentified fits very well for me.
Right. Now, part of the reason I asked you that was a very good friend of mine, quite a long number of years ago, went from a lady from America in a group to visit the pyramids. I can't think of the lady's name at the moment, but she did write a book following that trip, and she published some photographs. And the interesting thing was that at one time they were at some distance from the Great Pyramid, and they were all taking the usual photographs. And when my friend developed his photographs, on each side of the Great Pyramid, appearing by size to be way past it, were, I think, three quite distinctive UFOs, the circular ones with a little like cupola on the top. And the funny thing was, the lady who led the group, she printed a nigh on near exact copy, because she took a photograph at the same time, but the UFOs weren't in her one. So you were there, and they were there, and that was the point I wanted to make. Now, where did I want to go from here? We're getting into the last sort of 5 minutes of the program, and I do want to keep a minute back right at the end to announce next week's guest. I had stacks of questions to ask you. Well, I still have, but there's so much of interest in what you're doing. Now, you said that you've literally witnessed hundreds of miraculous healings. did these come about through all different means, or were you really thinking of the process of a meditative state? And
well, I go into those sessions with the intent of being a doorway for healing.
Yes.
So I keep my intention in the place of being, you know, a channel of healing energy, basically.
Right.
But
yes,
nothing happens unless that person chooses the healing and believes it.
Correct.
And when I say I've seen miraculous healings, I literally have seen the blind man see and the crippled child stand and cancer cured. I had one lady who had 6 weeks to live. Doctor gave her 6 weeks to live, and she had no cancer within a week.
Mm.
And I literally watched those things happen. And it's always that person taking their belief, taking their intention, taking their health vibration, and putting it into themselves and creating their experience.
And it's wonderful to get that confirmation. But I think you're absolutely right. It's no good people asking for healing unless they believe within themselves that it can take place.
That's why placebos work, right?
Well, yes, indeed. Yes, absolutely. Now, you've got a minute or two, John, to perhaps give a last message to our listeners. Would you like to say something before I have to shoot you off and announce next week's guest?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I would like to leave everyone with is this, is that you have the power to create anything in your world, anything at all. Your potential is set by you. And so that if you take this moment and this time to choose to create something joyful, something positive, something healthy, and something loving, and something prosperous, if that's what you wish, then you have the complete power to create that through your belief, through your intention, through your thoughts, through your words. And all you have to do is, anytime you're creating anything that's not that, just think it's silly. Because if you're the creator, creating anything with that is just silly.
Thank you very much, John. That's great. Your timing is perfect. It's been very enjoyable talking to you. You've had some interesting experiences, and I'm sure you will get some interest in your books. Thank you very much for coming onto my program.
Thank you so much. Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, friends, that was a very interesting chat. And next week I have Mary Sparrow Dancer coming on. She is focusing primarily upon the awakening of the spiritual consciousness in humankind. And she's calling for new awareness, for global compassion, for human rights and the rights of all life, including the Earth itself. She's also got a lot of other interests. She studies ancient history and documents. She's been a wildlife rehabilitator for many years. And I'm sure once again we're going to have a very interesting program. So thank you for being with me today. Do appreciate your listening in, and I'm sure you enjoyed it. And I do hope you can make it with me next week. So God bless you all. Thank you very much.